But if you look at the two losses, right? And I'm going to ignore Florida State here for just a second.
Oh, because it weakens your case? You're going to ignore it?
It absolutely weakens my case. So it's an aberration. Right. It's a statistical anomaly because it weakens my case.
This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast, episode 193. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Jerem Jordan of BYU Sports Nation fame returns to the podcast. He helps us break down who might be the starting five for the men's basketball team and who might surprise us. He and I then debate which Cougar football team was better, 2006 or 2009, and he finishes up talking about the new sibling volleyball coaches. Matt and I then yap about Tyler Hawes and his perfect stats, Austin Colley's CFL splash, Taysom's growing hype machine, and we continue the debate of 2006 versus 2009. Go to CougarFan.com for all of your Cougar sports news. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Download the podcast on iTunes and listen to us right now. Welcome back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Frequent guest and host of BYU Sports Nation, it's Jerem Jordan. Welcome back.
Adam, what is up?
It's been almost like 2 months. Now, I've seen you since then. But yeah. It's been too long.
You came and partied at the BYU Broadcasting.
Yes,
you came on our natural grass.
Yes, and, which was awesome.
It was great. It was fun to have you there.
Once you've seen Spencer in makeup, you can't go back from that. It's a life-changing experience.
You can't unsee that.
No,
cannot. It's one of the rare things you can see from space as well. There's the Wall of China, there's the Luxor, the Bingham Copper Pit, and Spencer in makeup.
Makeup and hair. Yes,
he's a pro, so he wears makeup.
You do not wear makeup.
The guy's a pro. He really is. He knows what's up. I'm riding his coattails to glory, hopefully.
Well, hey, somebody's got to do it, Jerem. Somebody's got to do it. So I'll start you off with, you are a fellow geek. Have you done anything particularly geeky as far as movies or TV this summer? I know you've got a young kid, so...
I've seen all the movies that have come out, and they're, Avengers was the big one, and Ant-Man's coming out this week. And yeah. I enjoyed Inside Out a lot. I enjoyed Terminator Genesis, actually.
I did too. It's gotten a little trash, but I thought it was quite, it was fun. I mean, I don't know what people expected, but.
Yeah. If you've seen the other movies and you liked them, they played really well off of those.
Yes.
And kind of rewriting an alternate version of that. But it was, it's been good. There's still some good movies coming out. I mean,
yes.
I was iffy on Fantastic Four. I saw a new trailer today and I thought, wow, this actually looks pretty cool. Surely it will disappoint, but whatever.
Well, they're so far, two for two in disappointment with Fantastic Four movies. So. They may be.
I don't know how with Jessica Alba they could disappoint. I thought that was a surefire win, then, but whatever. there were a couple of trailers that came out recently that were of note. Suicide Squad, I saw, which just looks like the creepiest, weirdest thing ever. And then, which I'll probably go see anyway. And then of course, Superman versus Batman: Dawn of Justice. That looks pretty stinking sweet.
So, are you pro Ben Affleck, Batfleck, or do you worry about him in that iconic role?
I do not worry at all after seeing the trailer. He just, all of a sudden, he took on the mantle of Bruce Wayne, and it is going to be just fine.
Yes, I've never seen, what is the movie with him where they make the movie to get the people out of Iran? Why can't I think of the
name
right now? Anyway.
Argo.
He is fantastic in that and some other things. So I'm fine with him. I mean, my gosh, George Clooney and Val Kilmer have played Batman. It's not, it's not some holy shrine.
Exactly.
So moving on from
The kid from Newsies did recently too. It was fun.
Yeah, the kid from Newsies did all right. not many people bring up Newsies when they talk about, Christian Bale's best performances.
Sometimes after BYU Sports Nation Newsies airs is on BYU TV, so we say, what airs after us? Batman. I mean, Newsies.
I mean...
Yeah. We take great pride in the Christian Bale part.
Yes. Well, he is Batman. So Matt, I had Matt. Gosh, I'm already going on to the next part of the show. Gerald,
that was a compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I kind of thought it was an insult, but Matt will appreciate that. So from today's show, you were back on the air on BYU Sports Nation today, and so we got a tweet bag question from Steve. That's at slarson801. He asks if you're nervous about Pitta coming for your job, and that's referencing that he was on the show yesterday with Spencer, and I guess took some pot shots at you. Is this a building rivalry, Jerem, or do you think your chair is safe?
No, I'm not afraid of anything.
You're not afraid of Dennis Pitta.
Listen, Dennis Pitta is the man. He really
yes,
he is. He's awesome. His sense of humor is great, and he's one of our greatest skill position players in the NFL of all time. Maybe
oh,
the
yes.
best that we've produced. No, not scared. If I'm scared, I'll buy a dog. Not scared.
So, in more serious questions,
and that's not the first shot from Dennis at me either. That's the second. That's the first public one. The other I mentioned on the air today, on Media Day, Spencer was doing an interview with Dennis in Studio B, where we do our show, and I snuck in there, and Dennis didn't know I was in there, and he said a similar comment. So maybe this is something that Dennis is actually pursuing. He told us that he enjoys the show and catches it and is aware of what we're doing, so we thought, we literally asked the question, why are you watching our show? But yeah, no, not afraid. I'm afraid.
Well, as I meet more and more over the years, I've met some of former athletes. It's amazing to me how some of them are still diehard, passionate BYU fans and probably listen to your show and watch, you know, the games on TV. And then you'll talk to other ones and they don't know. They don't even have any idea if the team's any good this year. They don't watch it all.
Yeah, it is funny how that works. And, you know, BYU TV, a certain person watches BYU TV and a certain person doesn't, you know, and we get that.
Yeah.
But we recently had a former BYU quarterback tell us, hey, my family watches your show all the time, and all you guys do is have defensive guys on there besides Blake Fowler, so I need to come on your show. We were quite amused by that.
Yeah, the offense gets no love on your show, ever. You guys never talk about
Taysom. We represent the offense, and then all our analysts represent the defense.
Yeah, yeah. So another tweet bag question, we'll go back to basketball here for a second. So for 2015-2016, Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter, asks you to predict the starting five, Jerem. And I know you guys have talked about this on the show, but as of today, and I know it might change day by day, who do you think the starting five is going to be in game one for Dave Rose?
Game one, I don't see Nick Emery starting initially, especially after the lacerated foot. Who knows how long that will take to recover from. Hopefully not very long, but lacerated heel, I guess.
Heel.
Okay, starting five. Collinsworth, Fisher. At that point, who do you put at three? I'll pause on that one. Davis, Kafusi. I have Austin coming off the bench, actually.
Okay.
To start. And then at the three there, if BYU wants to go with eights, I'd be surprised. Who do they put at the three? That's a good question. Who's the other wing guy? Maybe they throw Emery in to start. Maybe
Toulson?
Jake Toulson makes a splash.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Jake's going to have a nice season.
Yeah,
I think he's ready.
That if eights was the three, if that was your starting lineup, was the two veteran guards and then the three big men, that would be one of the most drastic changes of any team I've ever gone from a team that before played one, maybe two big men at a time, to now we're going to start three of them. That would be
wild.
That'd be quite a change. And I don't know if they could play the same style, but I'm with you. I don't think eights starts, and I don't think he starts at the three. If he does, it'll be in one of those post positions. So anybody dark horse as far as the freshman or anyone else that you think might get more playing time than maybe they're projected to?
Yeah, I'm wondering about Zach Selyus. And I saw the guys play pickup the other day. and it was interesting to see this kind of body language. Shirts and skins, really competitive. You know, Corbin Kafusi had this put back slam that was just like, whoa. Nate Austin running around, which is good to see. Even Jacob Hartsock was even, you know, getting involved in it and everything. So, yeah, I'm interested to see who emerges that we don't, because I don't think people, like, what's Jordan Chapman going to do? What's Corey Calvert going to do? What are the roles for guys like that? Yep. I think Zach Seljaas is a guy that, if you recall, Jackson Emery, 04-05, if I'm not mistaken, or 05-06, his freshman year, he was a nice weapon off the bench to play a little bit of defense, and then he would hit a timely three every now and then.
Right.
That's all he kind of did, right? He didn't have a huge role, but it was a nice role. I'm wondering if Zach Seljaas can fill that role. Granted, he's 6'8", so he is a long, big version of, say, what we think Jake Toulson was before he came in. Now, Jake, of course, didn't go on his mission, anxiety. That had to play a role in the basketball season emotionally. It had to. And yeah. I've talked to people close to him who said he wasn't the regular Jake. Expect him to be much better this next year. So I think Jake makes the leap, could start. I think that Dave trusts him. Granted, there were times where I saw him playing, and I could see body language from him and the coaches, and I thought, he doesn't exactly know where to be, as my two-year-old's yelling, Daddy, through the door.
That's okay. Happens on this podcast all the time.
I think Jake might be a dark horse of a guy that emerges. Granted, we all think Nick Emery is going to be something special, and I think that he'll start at some point and for a long time, but I don't think it'll be in the first, I don't know, 5 or 6 games. I think it'll take a little bit. And plus you want a little bit of bench scoring.
Yeah.
Tyler Halford's role is a valuable one. Anson Linder's role, later he started in conference play, is a valuable one. How do you replace Tyler Haas scoring, for one thing, right? But then how do you replace the bench output from Linder or Halford? That's something BYU is going to have to answer. I think they have guys. I think they have more depth, but it's who.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of questions, and heck, last year at this point, I think we would have all probably been wrong in our predictions on who ended up getting the minutes at the end of the year based on injuries and other things. So you never know. Shifting back to football, Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney, had a question for us, and then he and Andre actually then went back and forth on it. But they have a family debate. The better team, is it 2009 or 2006? So, Jerem, do you have an opinion on which team you think, if they went head-to-head or if you want to compare their seasons, however you want to do it, is it the 2006 squad with John Beck, or is it the 2009 squad?
Now, in the spirit of Dennis Pitta, I'll go with 06.
I will also go with 06.
That team was amazing. They lost 2 games. They were really close. I drove down to the game at Arizona where Nate Mickle gets clobbered. They didn't call anything. He laid down on purpose, trying to draw a flag. Great story. I got into an argument with a fan about that one, actually. Then they just barely lose that one by 3, and then they lose, you know, I think by 3 again, 23-20 in double OT at Chestnut Hill at Boston College. That's it. They win the rest of the games. They crush Oregon. At the time, the biggest bowl margin of victory BYU had ever had until they beat UTEP in 2010. They had the largest margin of victory at home, I think, in the country. The defense was amazing. The offense was amazing. You had skill position players all over the place. John Beck finally blossomed, ends up being, a second-round pick. That team was awesome, okay? 09 was really, really good as well. In fact, the same record. But their losses don't come close because they get worked in the 2 losses. Granted, their Oklahoma win is better than any win on the 06 team, and you have, of course, the overtime win against Utah. Granted, Beck Tarlin is kind of considered better than that one, but still great wins over Utah. But the fact that if at 09 had barely lost to Florida State and TCU, I'd probably give them none.
Yeah, and that loss to, he mentions, Justin mentions the loss to Florida State. They were not a good team. So I know reputation.
Florida State ended up that year like like 7-6 and 5.
Yeah,
six.
They weren't particularly good. You pointed out the thing that really does it for me is that 2016, their margin of victory was 22 points. They beat teams by 3 touchdowns. The 2009 team against a fairly similar schedule, maybe a little weaker schedule, only did it by 2 touchdowns. That team also gave up 22 points a game, the 2009 team. That defense was not comparable to the 2006 defense. The offense might be comparable, but 2006 had a much, much better defense.
Yeah, still great finishes. You beat teams from Oregon in Vegas, a ranked Oregon State. And the schedule in 09 was tougher. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
They played a bunch of tough teams. Obviously, number 3, Oklahoma. BYU makes their season bad because of Colby Clawson's tackle on Sam Bradford. There's a ranked Oklahoma team. There's a ranked TCU, Utah, and Oregon State, not to mention an unranked Florida State.
Yes.
So that's a pretty good schedule, and that's better than what 06 played. 06 just took it to everybody. Plus, back to Harleen, that kind of moment is just, it's tough to beat. 09, yes. You beat Oklahoma. That is
pretty awesome.
Best win, in my opinion, in program history. So that's a really, really good debate, and I'd love to hear Brian Logan's stance on this, because anytime we bring up anything on the show ever, it's like, 09 is the greatest thing ever. Like, greatest game ever, Miami's like, no, Oklahoma.
Right.
Like,
was Oklahoma the reigning national champion in 2009? I don't think so. Who won in 2009?
No, they had not won the national title the year before.
Miami's.
Yeah.
That win.
It's not close.
I don't know if we have another win besides maybe just because the national championship came with the win to Michigan, but they weren't nearly the team Miami was year.
We had that debate recently, too. Miami finished the year as number 3.
Yes.
That is by far the best opponent by how they finished in BYU history.
Yes.
I've never looked up kind of what were the best wins that way. I'm going to do it in the next couple weeks. It's not even close. One, they were number 1 at the time, and 2, they finished number 3. Not, BYU is probably never going to do that again.
No, it's
hard.
United
beating Alabama, and then they finish number 3?
Yeah,
number 1, and then they finish 3.
Alabama's the great comparison, Jeremy, because if you weren't if they're young enough that they weren't fans at the time, Miami was Alabama. They were the machine. Them and Florida State at the time were the teams, and that win was spectacularly awesome. I'm going to get you out on one non-football or basketball-related question. I have not had you on since the coaching changes happened with men's and women's volleyball, and as you are the play-by-play guy for the men's volleyball team, what is your take on those coaching changes, and do you think special seasons could be in store for both of these new coaches, or do you think it's a rebuilding years for them?
I'll start with the men. I love the hire. I thought it was between Rob Nielsen and Sean Olmstead. And from a lot of people I talked to, very happy for Sean, sad for Rob, in that Rob probably deserved it, but Sean Olmstead had such an amazing year with the women. This was something I think he wanted to do at some point, and the timing became good because all of a sudden Chris McGowan decided to step down. So it makes total sense that Sean Olmstead is the next head coach at BYU. Now, I hope, and Rob Nielsen's still thinking about whether he's going to accept an assistant position. I hope he does. I'm not sure what it would do for him unless he wants to wait around to be the next guy. And he's super talented, could be a head coach or assist somewhere else. And it'd be a bummer if he left, but maybe he comes back later. The men's team is primed to win the national championship next year. They return a ton of dudes. They lose Phil Fuchs, Josue Rivera, and Jalen Reyes. So your libero, an injured outside hitter, and then one of your starters. So essentially two starters. They return Ben Patch, who was a first-team All-American, now playing on essentially the USA B team, which is pretty good for a guy straight off his mission.
Yes.
They are going to contend for the national title. Loyola's best player, the National Player of the Year, he decided to go pro. So I don't see Loyola as big a threat as they were last year. So that maybe opens up a spot for BYU. The men are going to do well. I'm very excited. People should watch those men. The women, however, have nothing but disappointment in their opportunity because they went to the national title match.
Yes.
I don't see a situation where without Jen Hampson they can go to that. However, winning a conference title, winning a couple games in the NCAA tournament, that would be fantastic. I'll never complain about multiple wins in the NCAA tournament. The standard's not that high. The standard is to get to the tourney and win, but I think Heather Olmstead is a really good coach, and BYU is lucky to have her. She's kind of the Mark Pope of the women's volleyball team, if you will. Hopefully that resonates with some people, where that's a head coach who just happened to be an assistant for a while at BYU. Really talented. The women should have a fantastic season as well. Are they going to go to the national championship game? Probably not. That was quite the run. In fact, it's never happened where an unranked team went to the or an unseeded team went to the Final Four. But it's going to be a great year of volleyball at BYU again with the Olmstead siblings.
Yeah, it's amazing. You've got siblings coaching the same sport on each side. It's the fact that they were on the same staff last year is also pretty cool. I mean, Matt and I do this podcast together, but if I had to work with them every day, it'd be bad. It'd be bad. We couldn't do that. we will definitely encourage folks to check out BYU Sports Nation if they haven't already. Available basically any media way you can imagine, radio, TV, podcast. And then, of course, you guys are going to have lots of, I'm sure, preseason stuff coming up here in the next few weeks, I'd guess, starting August 1st. Are you guys going to start really jumping, or is it a little later than that?
We jump all year, baby.
That's true.
Yeah, we'll start pumping out previews specific to fall camp and season preview show and all that stuff, getting ready for that. So 53 days away, 52, 51. We're getting close. We are getting close. Fall camp is just a couple weeks away, which means everything and nothing at the same time.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Well said, sir. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast, and we will definitely have you on again soon.
Adam, it is a privilege for me to be on the Rise Show podcast. Thank you.
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout podcast, episode 193. Matt, what's going on?
We are 193 episodes old, my friend.
Yes, that when you say it that way, it sounds really old.
I don't know how old that is in like dog podcasts. I'd have to get out a calculator.
47.
You just threw out a number. Yes, and you really just picked it because it was Ziggy Ansah's number.
That is also correct.
That's fine. Just worse ways, worse reasons to pick a number.
I was in Provo last week, and I saw a kid wearing a Detroit Lions Ziggy Ansah 94 jersey.
That's awesome.
And I said to the kid, he was probably 10 or 11, "Nice jersey, kid." And he looked at me with that look of weird dude.
Stranger danger.
Yeah, so he's like,
you can't engage kids like that.
Why not?
It's creepy.
It's not creepy.
It's a little bit. It's not,
I'm there with my, I'm walking past him with my wife and four kids.
It's only getting creepier.
You're creepy. All right. So Matt, last night, we're recording this on Tuesday night over your objections because you're missing the All-Star game. Yeah, you're right. The game is lame. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
No, I got to see the pieces that I wanted. I got to see, the introductions, all that kind of stuff, the tributes to the old school players, the, first couple of at bats of the starters. I got to see all of that. Trout led off with a home run, by the way. First time that's happened since Bo Jackson did it.
Oh, Bo Jackson. He was good. Matt, the home run derby is something that, despite the fact that I kind of think it's lame, I always watch it. Every year. And this year, they changed the format.
They did.
Those that aren't following baseball or the home run derby specifically, it's now timed 4 minutes per contestant, and they're doing it in a tournament style, person versus person. Matt, what did you think of the new format?
I actually didn't watch the home run derby, surprisingly enough, but I like the idea behind the format. I know they had to change it to the 4 minutes because they were worried about getting ahead of the weather and all this. But I think I could. The reason I don't watch it is because it used to just take so long.
Yes, and it's a lot of watching guys take pitches.
Yes.
The first contestant, I'm trying to remember who the first contestant was, didn't take a single pitch. He swung at everything, and it didn't matter where it was.
Yep, that's the way it should. That's the way it should work.
And most of the time, there were very few pitches taken. I like the format. I will tell you, of course, the winner was Cincinnati hometown Todd Frazier, who had been the runner-up before. And probably most of you that aren't diehard baseball fans are asking, Todd who? But he won, and he beat out Jock Peterson, the rookie outfielder for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who absolutely put on a show. Like, he hit one homer where the pitch was about at his eyeball level, which means he needs to get a better pitcher next time he's in the Home Run Derby. But
were they still having, like, their dads throw it and stuff?
To whoever they choose. Todd Frazier had his brother. And they had it down, timed so well, that you couldn't swing until... You couldn't pitch again until the ball had either landed in the crowd or had hit the ground, okay? And so Todd Frazier would yell at his brother, go, and he would pitch. So his brother was not looking back or watching the ump who was supposed to tell you when you could pitch.
They'd practice that. That's fun. That's fun when you think about it, though, because that's a couple brothers in the – well, probably not in the backyard. They probably got to use the ballpark.
Yes.
But that's a couple of brothers, like – practicing that and thinking about how can we win this thing. That's fun.
Yes, it is. I think it was a lot of fun. So Matt, before we get into the other stuff, one other thing. Have you seen the new Batman versus Superman trailer?
Yes.
And thumbs up, thumbs down, make you more excited, less excited?
It's a Batman movie. I'm gonna be excited. I am completely... What's the word I'm looking for? It's impossible for me to be objective.
Yes. I'll tell you what. I was not excited about this movie until that trailer. That trailer has me totally jazzed now.
You know, I've watched a lot of is the footage that people put on YouTube of like where they're filming with their phones, the filming of the movie. Have you seen any of that?
No, I don't look at any of that typically.
Oh, I've watched a bunch of that for this.
And then it's pretty cool. That makes you more excited?
Yeah, I like that. Cool.
All right. So we'll be talking about that movie again. I mean, it's like 12 months from now it comes out. So, you know, we've got a long time to talk. And of course, it is famous on this podcast for me doing my Batfleck impersonation.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Matt, let's move on to CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com, the best BYU sports news aggregator on the web. Matt, first up, Tyler Hawes may never miss another three-pointer.
Making it rain.
He is 5 for 5 so far this year. I believe he'll never miss another three-pointer in the NBA.
That's pretty awesome. I think that would get him on a roster.
I think it might get him in the Hall of Fame. Reality, though, he's played some, not a ton, on a summer league team. The minutes he's getting does not make me optimistic about his chances of making an NBA roster. Your thoughts?
I would agree. But what you hope is he's taking such good advantage of the time he is getting. Maybe they start giving him a little more time, you know, and then maybe that causes somebody to bring him in for an extra workout or something.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. That's what you hope, that maybe not the Cavaliers, but somebody else goes, man, I would have given him more time in the summer league. Let's bring him in.
Let's bring him in and take a look. And if he can go in and, you know, if he can shoot like that in summer league, go in and shoot like that on a workout, you know, he might have something there.
So we've got a theme in these next one. This is all former Cougs in the pros. Kyle Van Noy is to compete for a starting job coming into camp. Give me percent chance he starts game one for the Lions.
100%. He's going to be the greatest linebacker of all time.
Well, Matt, please get off the fence. Take a stand, my friend. Take a stand.
I think he can do it. They brought him in there because they thought he could do it. You know, and he had a, you know, got a little sidetracked with the injury last year. But I think that they've got a lot of Detroit's got a lot of faith in him.
Yes,
I think they have big plans for him.
Yes.
So I think they would like to see him get into a starting role as soon as he's ready to do that. And you know, when you look at the types of things he's saying now and how he's prepared himself for this season and those kinds of things, I think he's ready.
Yes. Yes. I agree. I think it's more like 85%, not 100. And I don't think he'll be the best linebacker ever. That seems a little much.
That might be a little heavy.
Yes, that might be a little on the heavy side. So Matt, the NFL.com every year does a ranking of the top 100 players in the NFL. So Mike O'Hara, columnist at Lions.com, listed who he thought could be on that list next year. And he starts off his list with one, Ziggy Ansah. And he basically says he thinks he will be in the top 100 NFL players in 2016. So next year's rankings going into the 2016 season. What do you think about that?
That's pretty exciting. You know, I don't know if you know the whole story about Ziggy Ansah, but the first time he tried to play football, he didn't even know how to play.
Oh, good golly.
Listen, the guy is a freak of nature.
Yes, he is. There's no doubt of that.
His athletic ability is just unreal.
So do you think they sometimes get him and Megatron out there and do like skills competitions to see who's the freakiest best athlete? Like have them kick soccer balls and like do the hurdles, just like have them do random athletic things and see like who's even crazier, more athletic.
Now, who wins in like a cage match? I think Ziggy's got the upper hand there because of his incredible reach.
Megatron, I think, may be a little meaner. And I don't usually say that about wide receivers because they're usually divas. But I would never say the word diva to Megatron to his face, would you?
No, no. I mean, As a matter of fact, I'm not sure I could say anything and look him in the eye at the same time.
So anyway, we both expect big things from Ziggy this year, even with what's-his-face departing, the tackle. I can't think of his name. Stomp on people. What's his name?
Yeah, Dominican Sue.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but when you think about the top 100, right? Top 100 is, you know, a couple of players from each team.
Yes.
And you look at the Lions and you think, is he one of the best players on that team? Could he be one of the best one or two players on that team? Yeah, he could.
Yes, and
I really
this year,
think that he could.
They had four on the list at 66. Five on the list. Calvin Johnson, of course, at six, and then they had linebacker DeAndre Levy at 66, Nada at 82, Golden Tate at 85, which quite frankly I think is too high, and safety Glover Quinn at 88. So they had five guys on last year, and I think you're right. I think he
can contribute as well as Nada does.
Yes, yes.
I think he can get into there.
And like Nada, he's a player who's on the, you know, the ascent of his career, not the back end of it.
Right. Right.
So anyway, that's Ziggy Ansah. Matt, another guy, former Cougar, that's making waves in the pro, though a different league, the Canadian Football League, is Austin Colley, who's now making highlight catches. Matt, is his sudden success at all surprising to you?
Not even a little bit.
Do you know what's surprising to me? The size of the end zones. And
advantage Austin Colley on that one.
Yeah, and his first catch was a pass that was thrown through the uprights.
Yeah.
And he caught it. That wasn't his most amazing. He had a two-point conversion that was a much better play. Go look those up on YouTube or any of your news sites for BYU. But I mean,
unfortunately, Austin Colley may never get back to the NFL. And it because of the all of the conversation around concussions and his history, he may never see the NFL field again.
I think
but
that's
really,
likely.
All this means is he may become the best receiver in CFL history.
Well, I don't know.
He might not have enough time to get there to put together the stats for it. You know, Cahoon, he's got some pretty big shoes to fill there. But
he looked like, in those highlights, man, he looks like old Austin Collie. The speed, the precise route running, the deceptive moves. I mean, it looked like Austin Collie, who I think he could have been a number two wide receiver in the NFL for years had he been healthy, which is unfortunate. But hey, CFL's game. And all of Canada, really. Matt, speaking of former Cougars, but though not making noise on the field, Jim McMahon recently had something to say about his time at BYU. So I'm going to quote him. He said to CSN Chicago's Inside Look that his college experience wasn't much of an experience. He said, it just wasn't what college life was supposed to be like. I talked to all these other guys. They talk about their schools all the time, how much fun they had. But the only fun we had pretty much was on Saturdays or Friday nights. That was game day. Other than that, it was a tough place to go to school. And Brad Rock adds, clearly he came along before the BYU Creamery had invented Broncos cocoa bean ice cream.
That's crazy. Cocoa bean.
Cocoa bean. So Matt, does this, what is your response to Jim McMahon's thought that he pretty much had no fun when he was a college student?
Not really a shocker for that he feels that way. I think that walking in, he knew what he was getting into there.
I don't think there's any mystery of where he was going.
And the other thing too is that I just like to throw out there, the guys that he is talking about, that he talks to, that went to these other schools, also did not have a typical college experience, I would guess.
No.
He's talking to guys that were successful NFL, had successful NFL careers. And most of those guys did not have the, you know, and pick a school. And you and I both went to BYU, but just pick any school. Most of those guys did not have the same college experience as their non-football playing peers, especially big-time programs. It's not the same experience. So the comparison is that much. I mean, so the difference is going to be that much more. What am I trying to say here?
I don't know. That's your job to say it.
The chasm between the two, between his experience.
The chasm?
And I don't even know what to say. I'm totally confused right now.
Oh, my gosh.
The difference between what he went through and what those guys went through is even wider than the difference between what those guys went through and their contemporaries who weren't football stars.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
It's just a different universe.
It's a totally different universe. The other part is he's been trashing BYU for when did he leave?
I don't think he even got out the door.
And again, I love Jim McMahon. I think he's the best quarterback that ever played at BYU. I understand, a lot of people would say Detmer or pick another one, but I think McMahon's the best. He was not personally a good fit for BYU. And that's fine. And it's a guy thinking back, man, it would have been fun if I had, had a little bit more fun in college. On the other hand, you know, would he have gone to another college and become the quarterback? He wasn't recruited. He wasn't going to go and play football at these schools that we're talking about. Right. So, you know, it's easy to have the regrets, but on the other hand, in the end, I think college worked out pretty well for him, right?
Yeah.
Came an NFL draft pick, made a lot of money. I think in the end, we love Jim McMahon, but college worked out fine for the guy.
And at the end of the day, I'll agree with him. It's a tough place to go to school. It's a tough school.
That is particularly true if you don't want to live the lifestyle that BYU has.
Yep.
Particularly true. Yes. And it is not the easiest place to go to school. So, Matt, let's move on from Cougars in the news down to just some, well, I guess they're still Cougars and they're in the news, but to some football preview kind of stuff. The first up is the Lombardi Award watch list was announced. It's very hard to know what this award means. Okay. Eligibility, and I'm quoting from the press release, for the Rotary Lombardi Award is limited to down linemen end-to-end, either on offense or defense, who set up no farther than 10 yards to the left or right of the ball, or linebackers who set up no farther than 5 yards deep from the line of scrimmage. Okay? Like, I'm not even, like, basically they're saying if you're a 3-3-5, all those 5 guys don't count, I guess, right?
Right.
I mean, anyway, the Lombardi, to make the list, were Tejon Karoma, Bronson Kafusi, and Manoa Pakula. Matt, I think there's very little chance that any of those 3 guys are being talked about this award at the end of the year. Is that, do you think I'm off base?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably accurate. I mean, this is basically an award for players who play at positions that don't collect the traditional types of stats that get them into consideration for other awards.
Yes.
These are guys whose big stats are tackles, and other than that, their job is to block people or eat up blocks.
And this is the watch list. While it's an honor to get on it, is 150 long.
Yeah, it's gigantic.
Sorry, 144. But, you know, and then 12 semifinalists will be selected. So congratulations to them for making the list. I think Kafusi is the one that's got the best chance of being on that at the end of the year. Athlon Sports had an article, Matt, about the 4 wild card players, okay? And this is how they define wild card, okay? And when they say wild card, these are players that can step up and play up to or beyond their potential. The ceiling is pretty high if they do that, okay? All right. Jamal Williams was first. Your reaction to Jamal Williams being a wild card player?
I don't really like the term wild card for Jamal Williams. I don't feel like that's a wild card, right? I mean,
if he doesn't get hurt, we expect him to have at least as good as his 2013 season, right?
Right. So that's just that's just meeting expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. He's not a wild card player. They also have Brad Wilcox at left tackle. Matt, what do you think about Brad Wilcox's wild card player?
Now, I absolutely agree Brad Wilcox is a wild card player. I think he's got a really... I mean, is he still doing EFYs and stuff? Or is he just playing football now?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think he may still be doing CSYs? EFYs.
Wow.
Hey, I had to deal with those EFY punks while I was on campus.
Oh, my gosh.
Gosh, it's just like you're flooded by this... I mean, they're walking all over the place. Ugh.
My favorite was as a student at BYU one summer.
I was
walking through the Wilkinson Center. Oh, you were there.
Yeah, I was there. I was with
you. And an EFY counselor stopped me and told me I needed to go back inside the dance and I wasn't supposed to be walking around.
Yes.
And I was like, no, I can kind of do whatever I want here.
Yes, yes.
I'm a student.
I'm a student. I get off your power trip. In all seriousness,
EFY is a great program, but Brad Wilcox.
I was going to say that. I was going to say Wilcox isn't going to be the starting left tackle, right?
That'd be a real wild card if he steps in. If he turns out to be the star offensive lineman, that would be a wild card.
But isn't if he's healthy, it's Riker Matthews, right?
Probably right.
So anyway, I'm not with that one either. Next is Bronson Kafusi. I don't see that one either. Everyone expects him to be the defensive star, so not a wild card. The one that I will take for them is Taki Taki.
Yes.
They have him as a wild card. I will agree with that. He would be a good wild card, a guy that would step up and play a bigger role. So, Matt, let's pick our wild cards. Who are your 4 wild card players that may or may not have produced in the past, but it would be, if they had a breakout year, would be a massive benefit for the Cougars?
You know, I look at, you know, what we got like in some of the receiver core, right? So if you think about people that maybe we're not really sure what to expect. That's how I kind of look at the wild card, right? Is this somebody that's going to step up in an unexpected way and make a contribution, right? So I would include people that maybe haven't played as much previously. So I look at somebody like a Taron Houck and think, you know, there's a guy that could be a wild card. I think could be a real serious contributor. But you know, it hasn't necessarily done much in the past. You know, but you know, for a variety of reasons, as we'll go through and talk about some of these others.
Yeah. Okay. I on that side of the ball, I'll pick Nate Carter. I think if he can come in and give a jolt out of the running game to complement Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill, I think he's a wild card. I mean, he did it a little bit last year, but very little, and he's a walk-on and all that stuff. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll give all you right. that.
Who's your next one?
So I was going to go with Nate Carter.
Okay. You can still go with Nate Carter.
Well, I think I would, but I don't have anything else to add based, you know, more than what you just said. There.
Then my next, also on the offensive side of the ball, I'm going to cheat and put two guys together. Tanner Baldery, is it? Oh, Baldery. And Steven Richards, who have been called the Bash Brothers. If you end up seeing a bunch of two tight end sets, that is a game changer. I don't necessarily believe we're going to see a lot of that, but that to me, those are wild cards. If they can add some depth to the running game and, heaven forbid, have a tight end that occasionally catches the ball, that changes our offense, and I think for the better.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's right. Good.
Any, I assume your next two are on the defensive side.
Well, actually, I'm going to do one more on offense.
Okay, fire away.
And, you know, I feel like I could probably loop a couple other plays in here, but I'm going to go with Tooney Kanuj.
Okay.
And what I'm saying here is the play of the offensive line, the ability of the offensive linemen to step up and take this offensive line culture that Robert and I is trying to instill here and move that to the next level is going to be very important to how well this team does. Right. So I'm looking to a couple of the guys on the offensive line to step up in ways that we haven't seen offensive linemen step up in a long time.
Right.
So I'll use his name in there, but I'm really talking about a whole handful of guys across the offensive line.
Okay, good. All right. Mine on the defensive side, a wild card is, I'm going to say Longy. Okay. Right now he may or may not be a starter. So I think that qualifies, right? Mm-hmm. He obviously has a lot of talent. But this is the year we find out if this decision to put him as a linebacker, which I thought he should stay in, we needed his part of the depth in the other side, on the running back side. But was this a good decision, and does he step up and fill that role of tackle guy in the middle that BYU needs? You need that Brandon Ogletree, that, you know, that guy in the middle that makes the solid tackles after the edge, you know, the playmakers on the edge force it into the middle. You need that guy. And, man, it would be really good if Harvey Lange became that guy.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Okay. Who else you got? Your fourth wild card.
Kind of in the same vein as what you were talking about here, I'm going to go with Chris Badger. I think this is a guy, you know, as he transferred over, there was some talk about what type of contribution can he make, you know, and there were some expectations around that, you know, based on the fact that he was coming out of a program like Notre Dame. He's right now, I don't think he, you know, he's going to, I think we project him to have some playing time. I don't know if he's really projected to be a starter quite yet, but I think he's a potential person who could step up in a way that will surprise some folks and make an impact on this team.
You stole my guy. I was going to say Badger as well. I think that's a guy that, it, because of suspensions or injuries or whatever, could end up being thrust into the spotlight pretty early in the season. Mm-hmm. And if he is a playmaker back there at free safety, that changes a lot of things. You know, if he can, you know, play the ball well, or come up and make some tackles, or be, you know, a blitzer off the edge, a surprise blitz, that kind of thing, it would make a big difference.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So, Matt, let's move on from the wild cards. There was a story on NFL.com about Texas Tech's coach, Zach Spavital. Is that how you say that?
I don't know, but he's...
Coach. 2 years ago, he faced Hill, Blake Bortles, and Teddy Bridgewater in this in a 5-week stretch. Okay. And he regards all three of them to be of equal quality. And he says Hill was just as good as Bortles and Bridgewater. What do you take from the former Houston Cougars assistant coach?
I think it's a great assessment, and not just because of the fact that I like what he's saying about Taysom Hill, but his perspective on this is really good. I mean, he played these guys very close together over a short stretch, and was involved in, you look at the game planning and all this stuff against them. And so I think it's a good place to get an assessment. Now, if you'd asked me, before he said this, you asked me to compare Taysom Hill to those two quarterbacks, I think Taysom Hill, I would easily put him in the same category as Bortles. If you're looking at Bortles' collegiate career, kind of where you project him to go in the NFL, I'd easily project Taysom Hill there. It's a little bit hard for me.
Bortles was selected third.
Yeah, but he was selected third. A lot of that has to do with the class that he was in.
Yeah, fair enough.
And he had a really good performance at the combine.
Yeah, that's fair.
He blew people away in interviews, and I would imagine Taysom Hill will do the same thing.
And before his final season, he was not projected to be the third pick in the draft.
That's right. He had a very good season and a very good performance. But those are the things that, forget the being taken so highly. But those are the things where I look at that and I say, yeah, Taysom Hill is easily in that category. Bridgewater feels like a little bit more of a stretch for me. Bridgewater was, and maybe that could also be a function of the draft class, but Bridgewater was always kind of projected to come in and be a guy that would go in and could start for an NFL franchise at the time.
And then fell due to a lot of...
You just said doo-doo.
Due to. My
gosh. Due to. Sorry.
Due to. What are you, like, 8 years old?
Yep.
I mean, you're the same person that still thinks I said made it.
You did.
Instead of mated.
You did. And I have backup from people on Twitter who agree that you said that.
No. Anyway. I've gone back and listened to it. I said mated, not made it.
All right.
Whatever. All right. Your point is well taken. I think one of the things that slants this for this particular coach is, of course, Hill was amazing in that Houston game that year.
Of course.
417 yards passing and 128 on the ground, right? And I'm not saying that his opinion's invalidated by that. I'm just saying, like, Hill was – that game might be his best all-around performance. Or at least it's one of them, right? Because he was really good throwing the football that day and running. But I agree with you. I mean, right now, is it outside of the realm of possibility that Taysom Hill is a first-round draft pick?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think it's the likely thing to happen. But I think it's absolutely possible. If he comes out and completes 60-some-odd percent of his passes and can throw a deep ball, he suddenly jumps from mid-round selection to first round, right?
Especially if BYU wins 9 or 10 games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because the hype machine will take over from there.
Yep.
So Matt, let's move on. He's of course Taysom's getting lots of praise everywhere, including from ESPN.com in the Big Ten write-up as a player who's going to give non-conference game give fits potentially to Nebraska and Michigan. No big surprise there that people, as they're looking at the schedules of some of these teams, are thinking, wow, what are they going to do to contain Taysom Hill?
Mm-hmm.
So Matt, we have a tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
Jerem and I already discussed it earlier on the show, but I wanted to get your take on it because you're important, Matt. Your opinion matters.
Oh, boy.
That's not true. That's Justin Sweeney at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. Asks us to help settle a family debate, Matt. We are now like family counselors, really.
Not a surprise.
No.
Not a surprise.
Wouldn't people ask us advice?
I think I'm the person I would go to for advice.
Yes, you often do. So better team... he says, who would win a head-to-head matchup, the 09 team or the 06 team? Now, in subsequent tweets, he and Andre Hutchins, that's at AC underscore Hutchins, debate back and forth. Hutchins lands on the 06 team, and Mr. Sweeney lands on the 09 team. Matt, where do you land?
I land on the 09 team.
What?
Oh, yeah.
You and Sweeney are wrong together.
No, we are not wrong together. No, I'm going to go ahead and side with Sweeney, because Sweeney's right a lot.
He may be right a lot. That doesn't make him right on this particular deal.
Okay, but seriously, though, okay, look at the 09 team for a second here. Okay, 11 and 2.
Great, right. 11 and 2. That's
they
nice
finished.
Record.
They finished ranked higher.
Don't care about rankings. Okay.
AP coaches poll and BCS.
Oh, the coaches, those guys that watch all the games.
Listen, none of those guys actually fill out their own ballots.
It doesn't. The point is, I don't care about the coaches poll. But go ahead.
Okay. But if you look at the two losses, right? And I'm going to ignore Florida State here for just a second.
Oh, because okay? It weakens your case? You're going to ignore
it? Absolutely weakens case? My case. Okay. So it's an all aberration. Right. It's a statistical anomaly because it weakens my case.
Yeah, I
but
like
the,
that.
The TCU, like that. And it was early in the season. You can do all of those excuses, right? The TCU loss, that was a very good TCU team. It was a painful loss. That loss hurt a lot. I remember being sick to my stomach watching that game. But that was a team that won every game that year and then lost a close Fiesta Bowl game to Boise State. Okay, so I feel like that is a very, very solid loss. And other than that, I mean, they steamrolled folks. And you look at
a solid loss? You remember the final score, don't you?
Well, but if you're gonna, what I'm saying is, if you're gonna lose a game,
Yes, it was quite frankly, one of the best teams BYU may have ever played.
There you go. See, now you're making my case for me.
Because you're making it poorly, I thought I'd jump in.
And the Oklahoma win was big.
Oklahoma win was big, and Bradford, if he doesn't get hurt in that game, they probably go on to, instead of be a somewhat mediocre team by record, they were 8-5. I bet they end up only losing like two games that year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think that the Oregon State win in the bowl game really, I feel like, really helps.
And they were, I believe they were ranked going into that game, though I'd have to try to look that up and see if that was true. Or maybe I'm thinking of Oregon. Isn't it funny that in those 2 years we beat Oregon and Oregon State in the bowl games?
That is pretty crazy.
Kind of funny. Matt, I'm going to make the case for the other team, okay? I'm going to make the case for 2006, okay? Here's the case. They dominated other teams, okay? They had a point differential of over 22 points per game, 3 touchdowns per game, okay? Their losses, while maybe not as impressive, the losses were by, it was an overtime loss against BC on the road and a loss against not a great Arizona team on the road. You were there and almost died, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. I was there and I did almost die.
Yeah, and you had to have a police escort out of the Arizona section of the stadium. So, but
I was lost.
But after that, you know, there's the exciting win over Utah, of course, and then a just trouncing of Oregon in the bowl game. Some other wins against a couple of decent teams in there as well. There's on both these schedules, quite frankly, there's a lot of cupcakes.
Well, they're very similar schedules other than the non-conference games.
Yes. Because
actually, I think they are the same schedule.
They are the same because it's the Mountain West, right?
Right.
So it was pretty close to the same. But I will tell you this, the things that really point to me is that point differential. The losses were both tight and could have gone either way. And that defense in 06 allowed less than 15 points per game. That defense in 09 was not even close to as good. They gave up almost 22 points per game. I'd say the offenses are pretty comparable. I mean, both statistically and just the eye test, right? I don't think either of the offenses you go, no, that offense was clearly better. They're probably pretty close. But I got to give it to the 06 team. I think they're a top 5 all-time team. at BYU. I don't think the 09 team is. Maybe top 10, but I think 06 is better. And the advanced analytics, by the way, back me up.
Oh, whatever. Advanced analytics, whatever. So I hear what you're saying. I think that the schedule's a little bit tougher in 09. And that's and so I feel
a
like
a little. I mean, we're splitting hairs. In both years, these weren't tough schedules. The opposition winning percentage both years was under 500, right? I mean, these were not tough schedules.
Now, let me ask you this question, though. If you just compare the two losses, I feel, you know, TCU is a tougher team than any of the other three teams that BYU lost to in those
easily,
2 years.
Easily,
right?
Yeah.
By a very long shot.
Yes.
Florida State was better than at least one of those two teams that they lost to in 06. I think Florida State in 09 would have beat Arizona's 06 team.
Yes, but they're not better than BC was in 2006.
No, that's probably not.
That's a pretty mediocre Florida State team. I mean, Justin on Twitter makes the case where it's Florida State. No, it isn't. It's the 7-6 Florida State. They weren't very good.
But overall, I think that those were two tougher games.
Okay. Well,
but they're losses, right?
Let's go to the wins, okay? In 2006, those losses look bad. Well, the loss at BC doesn't look bad. The loss in Arizona, in retrospect, is terrible because they were 6-6, right? And then similarly in 2009, the loss to Florida State looks pretty bad. But in 2006, they beat a TCU team, not as good as the 2009 TCU team, but one that finished 11-2, right? That win is probably the best win of the two seasons. Unfortunately, Oklahoma, we do the what-if scenario that they could have been better if Sam Bradford had stayed healthy. But in reality,
if Gil hadn't separated, you know, Bradford's arm from the rest of his body.
Right, right. So what the best win in that 2009 season is against Utah, right? They were finished 10-3. I think overall the schedules are pretty similar. I just think the losses getting destroyed by Florida State almost wipes out everything you just said. Because we didn't just get beat by Florida State. In Provo, we got hammered by a mediocre Florida State team. That one hurts 2009 pretty massively to me. But I don't know. It's a good debate.
Great debate because I think there's these two teams are closer together than you do. I think they're probably both, you know, high in the, you know, in the top 10 range of all-time teams, and I think they're pretty close. When you get into comparing wins, you know, common opponents just a few years apart, this is very, very close. This is a great debate.
But
you just happen to be wrong.
Yeah, right. You just think because you have an attorney on your side, you're right.
Sweeney.
I will say this. You look at these schedules and compare them to the 2015-2016 schedules. Matt, this is the past. This was the Mountain West that some fans inexplicably want to go back to. You really want to go back to this?
This is absurd. As I pulled up the 2006 schedule to look at this, right?
Yeah.
I'm on the BYU website looking at the schedule, and they've got the television column over there to the right.
Yes.
And I see the MTN.
Yes.
All up and down the side of that bad boy. I remember that was miserable. Nobody had that channel.
So go to either season. Go to either season. 2006. I'll pick on 2006. I made the case for it. After we beat TCU, okay, really good team, and we had lost a couple weeks before to Boston College, you then play San Diego State that finished with 3 wins, UNLV 2 wins, Air Force 4, Colorado State 4, Wyoming 6-6, New Mexico 6-7, Utah, not a great team that year, 8-5, and then you beat Oregon in the bowl game, and they were 7-6 by the time they lose to you. You can do the same thing in 2009. It's spread out a little bit further, but 3-win Colorado State, 1-win New Mexico. You know, you look at that and you go, yeah, we'll always have a few cupcakes. These schedules had like 6 or 7 games that were terrible games against terrible teams. And we don't have that anymore. You've got 3 to 4 of those a year. I mean, independence. You guys want to go back to the Mountain West and have that? That's just, quite frankly, it's just dumb. I don't want it. I don't want to go back to that.
Going back to the Mountain West, that's stupid. I mean, only crazy people want to go back to the Mountain West.
I totally agree with you. It just doesn't make any sense. So, Matt, we are out of time. We had, I think, it's the best 193rd podcast we've ever done.
Hands down. Head and shoulders above.
Head and shoulders above any 193rd podcast. Matt, any parting thoughts for the listeners?
You know, we're just creeping along, waiting for football to start.
53 days.
We got the second half of baseball coming up here.
Yeah.
Get us through the dog days of summer.
That's right.
But this is going to be a fun football season. I'm excited. This is really, we're getting into what is the best time of year for football.
Yes.
The expectations are really high.
Yes.
Everybody's talking about it. There's plenty to get excited about, but you haven't played any games yet, so your dreams are all still intact.
The blue goggles are as blue as they can get.
Yes. It's a great time of year.
Yeah.
The blue goggles are ripe.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you everybody for downloading and listening. Of course, check out CougarFan.com. for all of your Cougar sports news. We will be back next week with some awesome guest or another. I don't know who yet, but somebody awesome. And of course, thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! So many secrets I could keep. Promise myself I won't.